Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small cap. And just before we start, I've actually pressed the wrong button, as a lot of people might have mentioned, seen that. You're now a fund manager there, Paul. So big welcome, Paul Scott, the fund manager.
Hello, everyone. I didn't spot that, so that's fine. Yeah. And I like the new introductory video. That was a new thing, wasn't it?
No, that's the wrong one. That's what I use for Chris Mills. So, you're in high company there. Anyway, we obviously we've got another jam-packed episode for everyone, if we can get through it with these technical problems that I keep pressing the wrong button. But before we sort of start running through some stocks there, Paul, have you been buying or selling anything over the past sort of 7 days?
Yes, I've been on a shopping spree this week. I had a bit of spare cash because I closed my hedges where I'd shorted NASDAQ and the FTSE 100, closed those because they served their purpose. They got me through a wobbly patch when we had the markets wobbling and the budget and everything. So I've closed those and I've used the money I freed up to buy. Do you want me to run through what I bought?
Yeah, please. Yeah, quick.
Yeah. Today I bought some Novo Nordisk. I've been hovering around that one for a while, and the price looked about right to me today. I've topped up my position in Likewise, the flooring distributor. I've opened a new position in Topps Tiles, which I like the new CFO joining, and the trading update was okay. I've topped up my property REIT CLS Holdings. That's at a 75% discount to net tangible asset value. New position I've opened in Peel Hunt. I've topped up Brickability, and I've bottom fished with HVivo, and also another property company, the German residential one, Phoenix Spray Deutschland. I've bought a new position in those. So yeah, I've been a busy boy.
Yeah, well, fantastic. Well, we come on to one of our first questions. We've got Rebecca now. She's doing the top 12 shares for Christmas. And she's just wondering, out of the ones you've just suggested, any ones which sort of stand out to you that could go on her Christmas card list?
Oh, God, I hate it. It's a kiss of death if you put any share, as you discovered last year. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. So, I'll decline the invitation from Rebecca, I'm afraid.
Oh, okay. Well, I've got one anyway, and it's one we, myself and Paul, we chatted to the management team. I don't own, but it's Traxys, which is the rail tech business. We had a fascinating conversation with the CEO, David Frost, who's newly joined for about 4 or 5 months ago, and Andy, I can't remember what your surname was, but They had a great chat. They were very open. And I don't know if you've got
David Frost.
He's David Frost. And I can't remember what the...
That's the CEO. And Andy Kelly was the CFO.
Andy Kelly, that's it, yeah. And the reason why I put it up there as a Christmas, because I think it's basically got lots of great technology in RailTech. What it does is effectively all the planning and scheduling, sort of like the operational software to help operate a train operating company, somebody like, I don't know, Avanti or the East Coast Line or whatever it is. And they basically help schedule the trains, they help schedule staff. Plus, they've got a lot of other software in terms of pay as you go on the, and also sort of like doing the software for refunds for tickets and stuff like this. They've got, and that's about sort of four, that's about 40, about nearly half of their revenues, and then the other half is events and data analytics. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on what you sort of picked up from our conversation with the two guys.
Yeah, there were several key points that jumped out to me. One was that they kept reiterating how they're being really conservative with the forecasting from now on. They don't want to miss. They want to get back into a cycle of meet or beat, which I think this is the new CEO, which I think is a good discipline. And the CFO is established there. They've got the remote condition monitoring equipment as well, which is high margin. They said it's a largely fixed cost business, so they've got really good operational gearing. But for various macro reasons, there hasn't really been additional revenue coming through. So it's kind of been derated by the market down to PE of about 12. And I think in a way, maybe that's justified because the core business, whilst it's very... The core business is the software for the train operating companies, as you said. But they've got market saturation on that. They're in all of them. And if it's very embedded, very cash generative. But where's the growth going to come from on the core business? So that's why I think the market has derated it. But I see it as a nice sort of base level valuation where hopefully nothing will go wrong because they're forecasting conservatively now. And then you could have upside, you know, from once the operational gearing kicks back in, if they can start to grow some of the other bits. I think that they didn't sound terribly keen really on the peripheral non-core businesses. And I think you made the point that actually the shares would probably re-rate if they got rid of them, you know, because they're not loss making, but they make such tiny wafer thin margins. It dilutes the quality of the overall group. I think that was a really good point. And they didn't push back on that. I hope that's not sort of commercially sensitive, but I personally would like to see it slim down, focus on the high quality metrics side of the core business, and then they need to put the cash to use, don't they? They're accumulating cash each year, which is great to see, but I think they probably I think they've said this in the RNS, they are looking at sort of infill acquisitions, not anything mega. But I think for this to re-rate, Traxys needs to get back on the growth route, I think. And I think that's where it's going. I didn't buy any myself. I can't quite push the button on it, but I think it looks pretty good. So over to you, Paul.
Yeah, no, I'm very positive on it. I don't own it because I haven't got any cash to spend. But as soon as I do get some money, then I'll buy some shares. I mean, when we chatted to them, I asked about the visibility for this current year for FY26. They've got a pretty good sort of like line of sight to that. To hit their particular numbers in terms of the, they've de-risked it and they're conservative, which is obviously always, you know, is good. And I think that's what Dave was made the point, that he wants basically to under-promise and over-deliver going forward to continue building trust. Now, the shares actually only, this is like trough earnings, they trade at roughly around about, I think it's something like 13, 14 times PE. I was just going to have a quick look, actually.
I thought, I had about 12.
Yeah, 12, 12 and a half times. With 20 odd million of cash. Now, as an unbundling opportunity, first of all, that rail business, which is about just south of 40 million on that software side, David reckons through the cycle that can grow at the high single digit, sort of 8-9%, as I interpreted that. And it should be able to deliver 25-30% EBITDA margins. In fact, it's got 80-85% gross margin. So on that basis, it'd be to me, it's valued at 3x sales. So that'd be about 120 million value business just for the train business. And then that data analysis events, you've got basically, it's a bit of a mixed bag. The events and the sort of the human traffic management side is not very highly valued. And I think that's what they'll sell off. So if you basically put sort of like a one-time sales on that whole division, because the rest of it actually is quite good software. He was talking about they just won a big DEFRA contract in the agricultural side in the UK, the video side. And they've got some good video analysis software as well in the traffic management. So let's just say one-time sales, another 40 million or 30 million. That'd be 150 for as a combined. Then you put 20 million of cash, you get to about 170 million value compared to a current market cap, and I think it's about just over 100 million.
Yeah.
So when you do that, you get about £5.40 per share. So I can see a good line of sight to effectively not overachieve, which I think they will do in the fullness of time. And that's just through bundling and sharpening up the focus. And they did say they've got good international expansion opportunities in North America, North Europe, Eastern Europe, and I think the Middle East, I think also they mentioned. So, I think they've got a good position here. And what I really, really liked, and this is not in the forecast because they couldn't give us a number because nobody knows it, is that when they're doing this tap and pay or the tap and go sort of like software ticketing technology across the whole of the regional train operators, they're doing the back end to do all the fair ticket prices to effectively run all of this tap and go software will work on top, and that could be really big in 5 years' time. Nobody knows how much it is, and that will just be pure effectively software revenue. So, and they've won that contract; it's under development. So I'm actually very positive. I went into our conversation positive, thinking it was a reasonably good, high quality business. I'm actually came away thinking, well, my understanding is improved. Plus, I actually think they realize where the value is, and they're going to shape that business going forward. So that's what, if I was going to put a stock on the Christmas card list there, Rebecca, it would be Tractis, but I don't own it. But I certainly will want to get some cash.
Yeah, I think it's good. As I say, my main reservation with it is that the core, the bit that makes all the profit basically, is saturated the market. So I think the growth opportunities are kind of incremental, they're not game changers. Whereas in the past, when this was on a PE of 20, 25 in years gone by, it was because people thought the remote condition monitoring equipment was going to sell big in the States. And that seemed to kind of fizzle out. So I'm not madly excited about it, but I think it is good value. And I think you're right. You've got a base level valuation around £3.50. And it's really quite easy to see it going up to £5 in a year or two, perhaps. So no, I don't want to sound negative, because I'm not. I'm positive about Tractis. I think it's very good. So
Fantastic. Right, let's move sectors. Let's go to hotels or cheap hotels. We've got Paul the Parrot. He's asking about Whitbread, that I think came out with a update on its cost base after the budget. But the shares responded quite poorly. Any thoughts on this one at all?
Yeah, I was a bit confused by their statement, actually, because this is obviously the Premier Inns chain, the market leader of sort of low to mid-level hotels in the UK, and also a growing operation in Germany, which is just tipping over from losses into profits. So I think Whitbread's a fundamentally really, really good business. But as the chart shows, the shares are just going nowhere, really, even though it's highly profitable, really good margins. So they put out this rather bombshell announcement saying that their business rates were going to go up, between 40 and 50 million pounds a year, which is about 10% of profit that they're losing because the business rates hike. And I think this business rates thing generally is a bit of a loose cannon, because you had another property company, Big Yellow Group, say that it was only going to affect them by 1.8 million. So the Whitbread's number is way, way, way bigger than I was expecting, and the Big Yellow figure's way lower. So I think this is a bit of a wild card at the moment that could benefit some companies unexpectedly and hurt others. So, but Whitbread then went on to say in this update that their actually current trading is all right, and that they think they can mitigate all of the extra business rates costs from accelerated efficiency and cost savings. But they didn't tell us what. So I'm this goes in my confused tray. I like the valuation metrics on Whitbread, but I don't see how they're going to be able to mitigate all the business rates cost because they didn't explain how. But I would say the balance sheet is fabulous on this. It's stuffed full of billions and billions of pounds of freeholds. And the supposed net debt is nearly all lease debt, which of course isn't debt. It's future rents in future years. So you strip that out and you've got an absolutely stunning balance sheet. So I still like Whitbread, but I need to better understand this latest update. I think there were just gaps in it that has left the market puzzled.
Yeah. No, I mean, the one thing I just anecdotal evidence, I was coming down to London about 3 months ago and I was looking for some sort of like, you know, cheap accommodation to stay overnight. I normally just go straight to, you know, to the go-to player Premier Inn. But yeah, I checked the prices and actually for like with air conditioned room, a Whitbread was midweek was charging me around about 280 and Travelodge was about 180. There was £100 price difference for the same night. It was too much. I went to Travelodge. I mean,
I mean, Premier Inn's cooked breakfasts are wonderful, but I wouldn't pay £100 extra for them.
I know. So I do wonder whether they're actually playing the hand a bit too much on being this go-to provider that people just use as a default option and just automatically book because it was a huge, it was nearly £300 for one night to stay at Premier Inn,
isn't it? I agree. And I mean, they are doing the half-sized rooms in some of their London sites. Maybe you could mystery shop those, Paul, next time you come down, you know, where it's just basically a bed pushed up against the wall and a shower room and that's it. You know, they're literally half the square footage, but they're not that much cheaper, actually. So, yeah, you could well be right, I think. And also, when I've mystery shopped Premier Inn in the last year, only twice, admittedly, both times they had real problems with the self-check-in machines. They were kept breaking down. The staff were rushed off their feet. They were clearly understaffed. Lots of unhappy customers having to queue. So I think, okay, that's a very small sample size, but I think I'm worried that if they keep cutting their costs, it's going to really damage the customer experience.
Yeah, well, it really damaged mine. I mean, when I'm going to come down to London, which is not very often, but when I do, I'm going to search around, you know, rather than just not bothering to. It was only because it was just a bit of a sticker price shock. It was sort of like, wow, that's
it is, isn't it? Yeah, and of course, Airbnb. Lots of people are now just booking Airbnbs, aren't they?
Yeah. Okay, good. We've got Steve Waters. He's asking about Spire Healthcare, which is the UK's biggest private hospital provider, which came out with a bombshell yesterday that it said trading in its own payer was doing okay. In private insurance was all right as well, but it absolutely has got pushback on budgetary constraints against the government, the NHS putting transfers into its hospitals for hips and knee operations, and the shares got tanked by about 20%. Don't know what your sort of take is. I own on it, so I can add to it, that's for sure.
Yeah, I haven't got a lot to say. So, I mean, it was a trading update to the 4 months to October. This was yesterday, wasn't it? It all sounded reasonable to begin with, but then they delivered the profit warning, EBITDA bottom end of previous guidance. We reckon it's about 14% miss below what the consensus forecast was. But it's mainly, I think you can talk about this better than I can. I'm not madly keen on it, but I do. The bull case is based on the property, isn't it, Paul? So do you want to take over on this one?
Yeah, if you put just basically the market value of their hospitals, it's roughly around about £2.70. Then you put an operating business and you could probably get at least 30-40p per share. So this is sort of like intrinsic value of over £3. And the major shareholders, including Harwood, decided to ask management to put the business up for sale. And you can see where the announcement happened. It's here just after in September. Okay. Now, what happened there, okay, is that there's a whole bunch of deal arbitrage traders who got on board there. Okay. They bought the shares thinking the deal could go at £3. Okay. Yeah. They're happy to hold. And then as soon as this profit warning came, they realized we're all underwater. So you've got an equally large, sharp reaction going down as these arb traders. I'll be very surprised if you see any long-term traders coming out. Everybody sensible will be waiting until this whole sort of sale process actually, you know, is completed, which will probably round about March, April time, because they're only still in the early days of it. Now, sort of ironically, or, you know, sort of like counterintuitively, by having a profit warning, it might actually make the probability of a deal being completed greater. And this, the logic being is because it's reset downwards the price expectations of the selling shareholders. Because I've heard sort of, unless it starts with £3.60, it ain't going to get done. Well, that profit warning blew that one out. So I think a deal could get done high £2, even three, just a low £3. So, you know, let's wait and see. But let's see, and also what any TR1 forms come to. But I think this was basically all the ARB boys getting on board here, pushing the shares up because they thought a deal, and this is the rule coming out, which is not a surprise. And so you've seen an oversized reaction either way. Personally, I'm going to be patient on it. And if you think about it big picture-wise, is it really in the NHS interests to have their patient waiting list increasing from already 7.3 million patients? And the answer to that is they can do it short-term, but they can't do it long-term. Well, they can, but they're going to lose votes. There's no doubt about it, because that's probably the highest or most important KPI for the NHS is what the number of patient wait lists. And also it stops people getting back into work. So I can easily see them been forced to change, because you see this with government. They just move. They change by the wind one way.
They're reactive, and then
the next way. But what we've got in the forecast for next year is a really conservative, they're not going to give us any more, you know, commissions from the NHS. So I personally think it's going to go, if anything, it will go up. But anyway, for me personally, I'm holding, and I think the probability of a deal getting done is actually higher now, because I think the price expectations from the sellers is lower than it was, which means that if you were a buyer infrastructure fund or you're a trade buyer, then you've got a better value longer term. Because as you always rightly say, when you buy a share, you're not buying 1 year's earnings; you're buying all the year's earnings.
Yeah, exactly. No, those are really good points. And, you know, if somebody just comes in and offers the standard 30% bid premium, you know, the institutions might well say, well, improve it to 35 or 40 or something, and we'll take it. Yeah. So, quite interesting. All I would say, though, discounting all of that, and rather agreeing with all of that, as a standalone business, if you look at the P&Ls and the cash flow side of things, it doesn't really stack up particularly well, in my opinion, which then makes me wonder, well, why would the properties be worth so much more if Spire can't actually generate a particularly good economic return from them anyway? Why would somebody else want to buy those hospitals at a premium valuation? So I'd put a bit of a question mark over the property values, but I completely take your point. It's probably now's probably the time to buy the shares, isn't it? Because they're on sale.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, they're taking cost out, and they'll just continue to take cost out. I mean, let's be clear about it. It's a win-win between the NHS and Spire, okay? So what you do, this is not rocket science. It's dead easy. If the NHS want to scrimp and scrape and have lower cost, then you give them a lower service. You just de-scope the damn thing. You don't basically have people going in, you know, with maid service, with nice meals all the time. You basically do a special, you know, de-scoped NHS service. And then you basically remove the cost. I mean, this is like not rocket science. It's dead easy to do. You just got to basically get your efficient systems. And I think it just needs a good shake-up. And I think that's why the shareholders are frustrated. They need the operational efficiency improving, which they're taking cost out. And basically they just need, you know, to get the product correct, you know, correct for all types of customer. It's nuts having the same gold-plated service for an NHS customer as you do for your own private customer who's paying the same and paying twice as much. I mean, you know, why'd you do that? You don't do that when you go first class and second class, do you?
And it's very, what do you call it? It's very topical. It was on the main TV news last night, wasn't it? A hospital in Romford, I think, where they had dozens and dozens of people queued up on trolleys in the somebody, you know, in the corridors, really in absolute crisis. So, yeah, very topical. Wes Streeting was quizzed, wasn't he, by a journalist, and he said, are you sorry about this? And he said, yes, I'm very sorry, and blah, blah, blah. But they need, it seems a bottomless pit, doesn't it? They just pour more and more money in, and you don't really see a lot of benefit from it. But what do I know?
Yeah, and let's be clear about it. The private sector, and particularly Spire, did the government a massive favour in COVID. I mean, they didn't have enough beds. And so consequently, they just, you know, basically they put all their beds out for the NHS. I mean, fantastic. It basically didn't solve their problem, but it significantly helped them out because they still had spillover in hospitals. But anyway, it should be a symbiotic relationship between two. And it just needs to, it just at the moment, the ARBs have come out, sent the shares down and depressed it.
Yeah, I think as well, it wasn't a disaster. It wasn't one of those profit warnings when you think, whoa, all bets are off, was it? No. But I mean, it could be interesting. I mean, it's given back nearly all of the gains from that low in April.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'd probably be more inclined to buy it today, actually, than pre-profit warning, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good. We've got a bombshell of the day from Jane. She's asking about Trustpilot. The shares, wow, they're down 30% today. Now, I think what's triggered it is there's been a shorting dossier from
another one, yes.
A company, is it Grizzly's Research or something like that? But I mean, normally people react and then, you know, then it recovers. But this mud has stuck big time. As I say, what's your view on it at all, Paul?
Well, it came up on I'm lucky enough to have real time prices on my ShareScope, and basically every, you know, 20 minutes or so, I double click on the whole market and look for the percentage movers up and down. And Trustpilot came up, and I thought, well, that's strange. It was down 13%. So I put some feelers out to my network, and one of my colleagues, Alan Morris, he found that Grizzly something or other a dossier. So I haven't read it yet. I've got it on one of my tabs to read later, but I was surprised that it's hit the share price so hard, because it's not the first time we've had a bear report questioning Trustpilot's modus operandi. And, you know, I won't go into the details of it, but it's basically the allegations, which are not new, are that, you know, they have mechanisms whereby companies effectively have to pay to be able to downplay or edit or reply to, I'm not sure what, negative reviews. So the accusations are, it's almost like a protection racket. That's obviously not my opinion. That's just what the bears say. So, yeah, I'm really, really surprised that this has happened again. But I haven't read the document, so I don't know what's in it. And, of course, you've got to remember, these people take short positions and they put these dossiers out purely and designed to smash the share price short term, and they could well be already covering and buying back. So it is a form of market manipulation, there's no doubt about it, but I don't think there's a law against it, is there, unless you say things that are blatantly untrue, in which case you could be sued by the company, I suppose. I'm surprised. I've never bought Trustpilot shares because on fundamentals, it's on a forward PE of about 60. It's way too expensive for me. I appreciate it's a growth company, and, you know, once they move into profit in the early days, you know, the earnings multiple is high, but it doesn't, I'm not interested in it at all on fundamentals. I think it's still far too expensive for what it is. But I haven't read the shorting dossier, so I don't have a view on it. But normally what happens is the company put out a rebuttal, and then the share price bounces and the shorts all cover their positions, and you then get the thing going back up again. So that could well happen. That's what normally seems to happen. So over to you, Paul. What's your view?
Yeah, I think they need to put something out pretty damn quickly, and I don't think they've done it in the past. I mean, the allegations being made by the Grizzly guys that they're basically putting fake reviews on to, you know, induce the companies to become customers, and then as soon as they become customers, they put more fake reviews on to get it positive, and there's a whole bunch of different, they use the same word as you, they actually used extortion as a word, I think, and they used mafia and this sort of stuff. And I just think unless they reply to it, Pete, this issue isn't going to go away anytime soon. I mean, you know, it scares people, and, you know, nobody can actually look at, you know, do the due diligence themselves as a shareholder at the authenticity of those reviews. So unless they do something pretty quickly, and I think this cloud is going to hang over the company. So if I, you know, I would say to their investor relations people, if you're not working on a rebuttal pretty quick, then do it, because it isn't going to help matters to the shares, because professional investors like me and you are not going anywhere near it until we're absolutely certain that this is all genuine and bona fide? Because I remember looking at it a couple of months ago and they came out that they've been used by the AI large language models as a good reference site for authentic product reviews. And that's where they're getting a lot of citations. Well, crikey, you put a couple of people who are questioning, more than questioning, the authenticity of those reviews, then that's going to blow those large language models out and that revenue. So I'll just say, you know, unless they do something pretty damn ASAP, this mud's going to stick. And you've got to do, I mean, the share price going down 30% to me says there's smoke until they say otherwise.
Yeah, that is, yes, I agree with all of that. Let's get the current price. Yeah, down 32%. Wowee. And seven times the average daily volume so far, 20 million shares traded. So, yeah, this is definitely serious, isn't it? I mean, like I say, it doesn't work for me on basic valuation metrics. Even down 32% is still far too expensive, I think. So definitely not for me. But this stuff all blew over one time before. I can't remember when it was. I don't think it was this year. I think it was even further back. But it did all blow over. So, I don't know. Tough one to call. I'm just steering clear. I'm not interested.
No, I'm with you. Until they put a definitive response, effectively saying this is rubbish, you know, then I'm not going anywhere. And I think a lot of people are just going to say it's in the hard box. Can I trust this platform? And let's be clear about it. All you need now is a large newspaper to pick up these stories and then start throwing it around to your customers. And then people who use Trustpilot as a guiding light for products, they're going to start questioning, well, actually, are these right or wrong? You know, they've been messed around. So they've got no choice. I don't think they've got a choice. They need to do it. And I would strongly recommend that IR director sort that one out, because...
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I have actually, on my Substack, I've got over 4,000 subscribers, and we have discussed this. So that's a decent number of people, many of whom, you know, run businesses themselves and whatnot. And I got to say, opinions were very mixed. There were some people who say, yeah, it's just a racket. But there were others who say, actually, they found it useful for their business and you know, it was a good service and they are authentic. So there doesn't seem to be an overwhelming view in the investor community either way, as far as I can tell. Mm.
Good. Okay, we've got a similar, another bombshell of the day. We've got Baltic Classifieds, which I think is just like a... It's effectively a classified news, the old newspaper, but online in the Baltic, so Estonia and places, that allow people to sell their own cars and houses and advertise jobs and stuff. They must have come out with some numbers today, but the shares are a good 13% down at the moment. I don't know if you've had a look at it at all.
We look at everything every day that's not in the resources sector. And Baltic Classified, we've been scratching our heads about the valuation on this for ever since it floated. I think it was yet another overpriced float when it originally came out. But it is the market leader in the Baltic states. But even so, you know, you've got limited total market size there. But the bombshell of the day today, that was down 20% earlier, was H1 results to October 25. The EPS looks okay, up 10%, but it was a full year profit warning. This is for April 26. Revenue growth will be below expectations, some EBITDA compression. And you had a warning on this back in September as well. So this is now the second profit warning. We can't get any broker coverage. There's zero balance sheet support, literally nothing on the balance sheet. So we think it's got further to fall even after today's drop. You know, it's not one of those things that you look at it and say, like Future, for example, you look at Future and you say, well, it's on a P of 5. You know, that is discounting in almost Armageddon. This thing's still on about 15 times. And it's one of you probably want to take over this point, Paul. It could be one of these things where AI disintermediates altogether. You know, you've had Rightmove, Auto Trader and Baltic Classifieds all plummet in the last few months because of those sorts of worries. So do you want to take the baton, Paul?
And I would give people anecdotal evidence. I mean, I've sort of like, you know, do when I put into ChatGPT, I ask about sort of products I want to buy and this sort of stuff. And then it comes out a suggestion, would you like me to sort that out for you, sir? You know, and so, yeah, crikey, when it comes to sort of classifieds, all it is an advertising board. And if it hasn't got any real sort of like, I don't know, insight or anything of added value to it, these large language models are just going to eat their lunch, because it's how consumers' behavior is going to change. Now, it isn't immediate, because I haven't yet got far enough to trust ChatGPT to do it, you know, to do a straight through payment for me. But I bet you in a year, when it knows me inside out, what I like, and that I'm a value guy and I'm a bit tight with my money sort of stuff, then it may well give it the reins and say go for it. But yeah, just an old job. So it reminds that whole industry of sort of classifieds, auto trader, and this reminds me of what Wikipedia was like when we first started the internet, because it was like the encyclopedia that everybody went to for information, because it was a massive load of them. Now nobody uses it. Hardly anybody uses it. And simply because there's you basically do large language models, don't you? Or you go, you know, why do you have to go through looking through masses of stuff on Wikipedia? You got it elsewhere. They scrape all that data.
Anyway. I suppose though, for selling cars, you need to have a dominant portal where people advertise because of the network effect. So I suppose, what are we saying? That AI could then increase competition, because anyone could set up an advertising classified ad site and point AI at it, and it would then include. Is that what we're saying? That we're breaking down?
I'll just give you an example, right? Okay. I'm in the market for a second-hand Fiesta, 3 years old, done 15,000 miles for under 10,000 quid. Tell me in the area, my nearest location within 25 miles, where I can pick it. It'll scrape the lot and look at and suggest me, you've got this, sir, this, sir, this, sir. Have a look at it. Why do you need?
But you'd still have to put it onto an advertisement portal, wouldn't you? And the AI would then collate all the results. So,
yeah, that's what I mean. So you've got your person who's selling it, rather than actually, you know, all you got to do is the large language model has an input into it. It will just because people want to engage with it and get their. I mean, if it becomes a significant buyer, as of, you know, replacing auto trader, then they're going to stick their content on it, or they'll be give access to it.
So what are you saying? Are you saying then that if I want to sell my secondhand Skoda in Lithuania, I could put the ad into ChatGPT itself? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you could do. I mean, I don't know whether you can do it at the moment, but that's certainly a possibility. Or you just put it onto any of your own little website, or you put it, you know, whatever it is. As long as it gets into chat in the large language models, then they can just feed on it and just pick it up, and then they just like give you a personalized service. Because if you start selling, you know, you start realizing I'll tell you another one. It's like Facebook in 2006, 2007. Remember, we used to have workmen who used to come around the house because we were putting a loft in and stuff like that. And I said to him, where do you advertise? Do you do it in the local classifieds? He said, no, gave that up years ago. Yeah. Just put it basically on Facebook where there's a local community. Wow, we get everything through there. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's all targeted. You've got a point. Yeah, that's a very good point. So Facebook will probably be selling data to AI. Because with the chat we had with Bloomsbury, Nigel at Bloomsbury, was really a fascinating educational session, really teaching us about publishing in AI and everything. And he was basically saying they're beating a path to our doors. That was for Bloomsbury's academic division, because they want the content and they're prepared to pay for it. So presumably then Facebook could do deals with AI whereby we just put our secondhand Skoda onto Facebook Marketplace. And it does work well, doesn't it? I mean, I sold a bed. Well, okay, I put a double bed that I wasn't using. I put it onto Facebook Marketplace for £10, you know, and I was absolutely inundated. In the end, I just gave it away. The guy who turned up, I said, "Oh, keep it, Taylor, just get rid of it." So, but I could imagine that all going through AI. And yeah, you could be right. It could completely bypass classified ads companies, couldn't it?
If it works, I'm using it, I can tell you. I know.
Yeah.
for skinflints like me, it'll definitely work.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got.
Because for me, AI is just a glorified search engine so far. I've not found it useful particularly for anything. But you're giving me ideas of what sectors could be turned upside down by it. So it's all interesting.
Yeah, good. Okay, we've got Drew. He's asking about construction or plant hire company VP that I think came out with results this week, which were in line, but they're restructuring their brand and hire sort of like plant equipment business. I think they're closing like half of their shops that service the consumer and concentrating on trade. Shares are pretty much flat, actually.
Yeah, we really like this. It's such a nice, good. I can't find my notes on it, but I remember we liked it. We were green on it. And it's owner managed still. Well, the owner owns about 50% and he wants to sell it. It's an open secret because he's tried to sell it before. Think he might be over retirement age as well. So at some point we've mentioned this before. At some point you're probably going to wake up and say, a deal's been done. You know, we're selling it for £7.50 a share or something. So that's, I think, just, and it won't be probably a process. It'll be all done behind closed doors, I would imagine, because there's only one shareholder who needs to agree it, really. The fundamentals are very good on this. As you say correctly, the brand and hire business, they're very open about it in the recent update, just saying it needs a bit of a sort out. But there's no reason why that can't be done. We like everything about it. The balance sheet's sound. You get nice dividends, I think. I can't remember what the dividend yield is, but I think it's good. It's 6 or 7%. And you've got a low PE, mid to high single digit PE, sound balance sheet, ticks all my value boxes. And I think if you're getting this at what is a really modest valuation, at what is probably at or near bottom of the cycle earnings, it goes into the bucket of shares that my bucket's full of shares like this that are, you know, the market is pricing them as if there's never going to be any economic recovery in the UK, which is mad. Of course there's going to be an economic recovery. One of the readers today said he's not touching house building or brick manufacturers and distributors because he doesn't think there will ever be a recovery in house building. Now, when investors start to think like that, you can be pretty sure you're at or near the bottom of the market. And that's a great contrarian signal, you know?
So yeah, it's like taxi drivers, isn't it? you get London taxi drivers.
When I went on my spending spree this week, I nearly bought some VP, but it's too illiquid. Even though it's a decent sized market cap, it's so tightly held that the bid offer spread would have meant that I would have incurred a 3 to 5% instant loss, which I couldn't stomach that. So I went same with Traxys actually. So that's the reason I didn't buy those two. It was just the market's rubbish. It's just not liquid enough in those shares, but the fundamentals are great for people who are patient and you collect in those lovely divvies. So yeah, I'm a big fan of VP. I think it's significantly underpriced.
Well, you're going to hate me here, Paul, because I'm going to be contrarian, because I would highlight to investors, even though they sold a shed load of scaffolding, have a look at Speedy Hire. And the reason why, because it's basically competitor to VP. Now, the reason that is the historical share price performance has been terrible, and they lost 20 million of scaffolding about 4 or 5 years ago. 20 million of scaffolding. Now, the reason why I say there may be a bull case here, okay, is that they've basically inked this deal with one of their other competitors called HSS, okay? And all of that volume is now going into Speedy Hire because they've basically bought all of their plant hire equipment. So one of their rivals has just gone out the market and they've picked up that market share for extra market share. The next trigger, i.e. consolidation, is VP has just basically closed its consumer-facing plant hire business in Brandon Hire Station, okay? Another competitor now disappeared out the market, okay? Which leaves two. We've got now two DIY consumer-facing plant hire companies, Speedy Hire and Tool Station. And Tool Station, yes, it is bigger, but with an oligopoly, I love those type of businesses, particularly ones trading at such low valuations, okay? And it's got one thing also today, which I thought was quite interesting, is Ofgem announced that it was basically releasing the first £28 billion of money infrastructure spend for gas, electricity and power. And that's part of a wider £90 billion plan to spend to improve the electricity networks and power networks over the next 6 years until 2031. These guys are big in power and electrical infrastructure. So a VP, actually. So I would say, yes, it's a very competitive market. Yes, construction is terrible. It's in the doghouse, hence the share price. But actually, you've just seen two people come out the market on the consumer side. HSS has come out totally. And therefore, you're going to get better pricing power. you're going to get stronger market demand. And we've seen this movie before where competitors go out the market, like GIF, music. We've also seen a number of others which have improved when rivals. So on a 3 to 5 year view, don't expect this to shoot lights out. But I've got a sneaky suspicion this one could actually do pretty well, because it's now, I think it's turned a corner. But I've said that before, but that's why I think it's a contrarian view, that maybe people haven't yet seen that the market has consolidated into Speedy Haar's advantage.
I think that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that. I'll do some more digging on that. But I like your rationale on that, Paul. That sounds pretty sensible. The only thing I would add is that VP is quite diversified. It's got it's made some good acquisitions. So it's got a gardening equipment hire business, and you know, it's got quite a nice diversity of different activities. So but you've engaged my interest with that Speedy Haar.
I like them both. Don't get me wrong. I think VP's a class act. I've always rated the management team. So I don't think anybody buying at £5.50 is going to lose money on it. I think you're right. I was just highlighting. I think for yours and my understanding of Speedy Haar have always been negative, but actually I've changed. I think it's got price value upside. I think there's an opportunity.
Well,
there.
That is very interesting, because I think people who have that type of insight and get it right. That's where your multi-baggers usually come from, isn't it? It was like McBride a few years ago. I always refer back to that. It looked like it was on the brink of going bust. But the key announcement that I did see, but I didn't really register how important it was when the bank just gave them a 2-year window and basically said, we'll suspend the covenants for 2 years. And I should have realized then, wow, it's not going to go bust. The bank's just done them this colossal favor. They obviously believe in it. And people 5 or 6 bag their money. So I do think you're right. When something's so bombed out that you can't get anyone to even engage and talk about it very often, that's often where the multi-baggers come from, isn't it? So I'll take a fresh look at Speedy Haar. Thank you, Paul.
Good. Okay, we've got Colin asking about the profit upgrade of the day. We've got SSP Group, which basically does... it does eateries and restaurants in travel locations on the rail in the UK and airports, but also around the world. And I think it's what's responded well is that it's spun off its travel business in India just recently, a company called TFS, which is now listed and worth, they own 50% of it, which is worth 1.4 or 1.5 billion pounds. Anyway, what was your take? The shares are up 11% today.
Yeah, we really like this. My colleague John spent most of the morning looking at this, and we didn't realize, I don't know how it slipped through the net, but we didn't realize that its Indian business, that it JV or whatever, was so valuable. So the 1.5 billion is the market cap, I believe, of it.
Of the Indian joint venture.
Yeah, the Indian joint. Yes. So SSP's share is worth 750 million. But that would wipe out, that's pretty much what it's the total group net debt is. So assuming, you know, they could monetize that figure and actually sell their stake at the market price. It IPO'd, I think, the Indian thing recently, didn't it? That would just wipe out all the debt on the balance sheet. I'm not sure how much it contributed to profit, though. I'd need to look into that, the Indian side of things. But yeah, it's trading really well. They're pushing their margins up. The margins are low. It said today it's pushing them up in Europe, I think, in particular, the operating margin. And it owns those upper crust places, operates rather in railway stations where you get, you know, your nice crispy baguette with some cheese and ham in it. And it's a nice product, overpriced, obviously, but you're ravenously hungry in a Waterloo station. You know, you just grab one, don't you? So I've always been neutral on SSP in the past because of the debt. It's a horrible balance sheet. But now that they've got a corresponding asset, which offsets all the debt, essentially, in the Indian thing, we've turned positive on it. So we upped it today from amber to amber green. So 3-star to 4-star. We think it looks quite interesting, actually. Yeah. Have you looked at it, Paul?
Yeah, well, I actually, just coincidentally, I had a fund manager interview with Richard Penny of Oberon Investments Monday. And I'd strongly recommend anybody have a look at that, because the guy is an absolute genius.
He's good, isn't he?
He's fabulous.
What's the name of his company again, Paul?
It's Oberon Investments. He used to, they've renamed it, but it used to be Crux Asset Management. But anyway, he's right out the Harwood crew type stuff. He's value growth. Anyway, he talked about SSP and this TFS business that has been spun out. Now, the one area that he did mention that people should dig around on is if they actually could sell that 50% or actually monetize it, how they'd get rupees out of India, whether it be any withholding tax leakage or capital gain. So that may not be quite... When you run the numbers, it works out at about 90p a share currently of the value. And SSP are only 165 even after today. So it's well over half of the company's value. And it's just be careful of any tax leakage. But let's be clear about it. I'm sure there's some pretty... Wizzo tax advisors who can do relevant structures in the Caymans that can actually shelter all this kind of stuff, but I don't know. And that's what he did. He did make, you know, he highlighted to everybody that that's certainly worth checking.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, you've got a couple of other listed companies where you have similar type of foreign ownership issues in other countries, don't you? Like, there's one of those healthcare businesses that owns a business in Egypt where the cash, you know, the dividends are effectively sort of stranded out there. And then of course, Pisa Cousins had issues with African countries. So yeah, you're right. That's something that needs some specialist knowledge, doesn't it? Which I haven't got.
Good. Okay. We've got a couple of people asking about the same share. We've got Will Dawes and Carmed about Future Group, basically they own Go Compare, a comparison website, and Marie Claire magazine. And I think they do a lot of these tech websites that are used in AI. Came out results. Shares have responded well, actually, up 8%.
Yeah, we think this is very interesting. My colleague John looked at this morning, so we've got a full write-up on this on my Substack for our premium subscribers. So a little plug there. This was an absolute darling growth stock, wasn't it, years ago, pre-pandemic. But since then, shares have absolutely collapsed. They've derated, but it's still generating huge profits and cash flow. And the PE now is only about 5. So we're looking at this thing, and basically the market is saying it's dead because of AI. That's pretty much what the market's saying. But reading through the statement today, I think they addressed the elephant in the room, the commentary, and they basically said it's not going to have as big an impact on us as people think it will. Something pretty much to those words. That's paraphrasing it. And they said that the only, I think, 16% of their revenues are driven through Google searches. So they're giving some actual, you know, some meat in there, some facts and figures that to back up their view that actually, and also, of course, they could start selling content to the AI machines. So we filed this in the don't know tray, but I should also flag they've announced, and they've been doing very big share buybacks, and Future Group, this is, they've just announced, I think, another 5% of the total shares, 30 million quids worth, we're going to buy back. And they've increased the dividend sevenfold, although it was tuppence halfpenny, you know, and it's still a relatively small yield. But I got the impression from reading John's notes on this, because I didn't look at it that much myself, I got the impression they've come out fighting, you know, that they're saying, actually, do you know what, there's more to this business than you might think. So we think it looks actually quite interesting at this valuation. We think maybe it's overshot on the downside, but it tends to fall back again when it does rally. That's the only thing. So there might be stale bulls in there trying to exit. But we think it's, yeah, we would flag it to people and say this could be worth a look. So how about you, Paul?
It's certainly very interesting that only about 15 to 20% of their traffic comes from Google. Now, what that doesn't say is how much is at risk from lost traffic from the large language models, from basically, you know, if you wanted to do, okay, what, you, I don't know, if you wanted to buy your latest Pixel 9 Google Android phone, would you go onto their tech comparator, or would you basically put it into your...
I've just done. I went straight to Argos, you see. I'm a dinosaur, Paul.
Well, there you go. In that case, they're fine. I was encouraged by their statement, no doubt about it. And they did come out that their medium-term growth was going to be 2 to 4%, which is basically inflation. But that's reflected in their valuation, as you rightly point out. It's really rock bottom low. So this may just become a cash cow and get taken out at some point in time by private equity. I don't know. It hasn't changed my thesis. I'm still a bear on price comparison websites and digital publishers that haven't got sort of like, you know, rely on traffic and advertising revenues. But hey, at the moment, the shares are going up. So, you know, that's positive.
Yeah, I mean, it'll probably fizzle out, though, this rally. So I'm not going to dive in. And I'm finding that with so many shares, they tend to overreact to good or bad news on the day. And then it just kind of drifts back to where it was, you know. So I think paying 10 or 15 or 20% more for things on a results announcement usually seems to be a bad idea. I think we're in a market where you can just bide your time and let the market throw the bargains at you. So I'm not going to chase future. But my colleague John made a really good point today as well when I was asking him and reviewing the section he wrote on future, where he said he's not convinced that AI would necessarily pay that much for that content, you know, whereas Bloomsbury Publishing, their academic catalogue is vast and it's unique, you know, and that, I don't know, have you got any thoughts on that, Paul?
Yeah, I wouldn't pay anything for it. But that's me. I'm a skinflint. Okay. Yeah, in the same sector, we've got Richard Leppington asking about moneytosupermarket.com, or Money, as it's currently called. I think they came out with some trading update or some result this week, and they were talking about the energy sector improving slightly. I think some of the insurance car insurance have been a bit of a headwind. But overall, anyway, what was your sort of take on it?
This was Wednesday, but yeah, yesterday. So Moni, I don't know how we're meant to pronounce it. Yeah, I tend to gloss over these things. I mean, we, again, John looked at it, unchanged expectations for calendar 2025, expects headwinds to ease in next year. The unlocking of the energy market again after all the crises since the Ukraine invasion in 2022. I could see that being an upside thing for the price comparison sites, maybe. And I think Future owns Go Compare, don't they? Is that right?
Future owns Go Compare, yeah.
Yeah, that was it. So, like you, I think I'm pretty nervous about the price comparison websites generally. So for that reason, I don't think I'd want to revisit Money or Future Group, although the valuation metrics on both are so cheap. I mean, Money is on a PE of about 10 times and you've got a 7% dividend yield. And I mean, for value investors, figures like that are like a light bulb to a moth, aren't they? We just can't help ourselves sometimes. Which is why we end up in value traps half the time. So I don't know. Doesn't really interest me, Paul. And I'm going to take a wild guess here and imagine that it probably doesn't interest you either.
No, and I think you raised a really good point last week that whether it is a risk AI or not, or an opportunity, the perception of it being a risk
makes
a massive, was going to be a drag on the share price. And I would say one morning in the next, this is my prediction for 2026, one morning we're going to wake up and one of the large language models is going to basically produce a new product that allows you to just like purchase stuff, anything consumer, all across the web, and give you a one click out, the payments going through. And when that happens as a first shot, that is going to make a massive difference to people's perception of price comparison websites.
Yeah.
So that'll be, I think that's a moment of truth. Now, whether that product works is another kettle of fish, but just think of what investors' reaction is going to happen when that is actually released. Yeah. And it won't be long. Just think of what happened with DeepSeek that didn't last that long after about 3 months, but it's going to put an earth tremor through the whole code comparison, the comparison website sector.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think I've ever owned shares in any price comparison websites because I've always been uneasy about that business model of just a completely unnecessary intermediary, basically. And what, you know, surely the electricity or the utility companies would much rather just have their own website. These are our best prices. And then, as you say, AI just finds the best deal for you, doesn't charge you anything for it. I just think the whole those price comparison websites. The whole industry, I think, is completely pointless and just unnecessary. So it exists really due to inertia. So yeah, I wouldn't touch any of them.
Mm. Well, you just got to add Argus, don't you? Anyway, so it makes it easy. That's your default.
Well, okay, that's the other thing. I mean, it's like with the holiday companies. I know people who are keen on AI, and I listen to everybody. I don't force my view on it, you know, because other people know more than I do. So I always go into receive rather than send mode. And talking to lots of people at Mello, the Chiswick, the recent conference, the guys who are really into their IT and really understand it well and work in IT, and they're, oh, this is going to change the world. I'm going backpacking. I got AI to do the whole thing for me, all the ferry tickets, all the other. That's great. But that's only a small percentage of the population who I think will do that. If you look at On the Beach, they put out lovely results this week. People just want a trusted brand they can go to and they'll look after everything. So I think the effect of AI on things like the holiday sector and maybe some other sectors could be quite limited, actually.
Possibly. Okay, good. Let's move to another set. We've got Ben Sharman. He's asking about specialist chemicals company or polymers business, Vitrex. I actually own some shares. These guys do Peak Polymer, which is super heat tolerant and very, very strong and lightweight. So it goes in things like EVs, aircraft, defense applications, and has been obviously adopted a lot in medicine, things like the spine surgery and also other bones being broken and this sort of stuff. Came out with some results. The shares responded well, had a bit of a relief rally after a very, very poor sort of like performance for the shares over about 3 years.
Yeah, I don't really understand anything much about this company, I've got to say. I think we did, it hasn't gone in, I can't find my notes on it. We did briefly refer to it this week. I think it was an update this week, wasn't it? I think we basically said probably looks priced about right. But that's not a particularly informed opinion. It's just looking at the raw numbers and, you know, God, look at the share price. That's just been going down and down and down, hasn't it? Yeah. I haven't really got much to add on this, Paul. Yeah, forward PE of 13.5. Ah, it's coming back to me. 9.1% dividend yield. However, I did flag that that is not covered by earnings. So I would caution people against buying this share for the 9.1% yield because I think that is looking unsustainable. The balance sheet's fine, though. Doesn't have an indebted balance sheet. But if it carries on, you know, I think they'll need to rebase the divvy down to about 4 or 5% yield. So that is that's all I've got on it, really, Paul. Have you got any more detail on this one?
Yeah, basically the reason for the shares been poorly performing over the last 2 or 3 years is that healthcare side has really been suffering. And what's actually happened is that their peak products that go into spine operations, in tobacco operations, has actually slowly been replaced by titanium-based products. But the rest of the business is doing well. And now the spine part of the business is about 25% of the healthcare division now. And the healthcare division, I think, is around about a third in terms of the profitability-wise, is the very good margins. So what is really going to trigger it is a recovery in this healthcare side. Now, they do actually have some Peak Polymer products coming out for spine going forward. They also have some new products coming into sort of like other trauma therapies in Peak into healthcare. Right. And then the big dial mover is that they have this Peak Knee, which is a new knee cap that they put into humans with Peak Polymer that you can replace metal and it'll be super hard wearing. And that needs approval. I think they're hoping to get approval next year from the Indian authorities. And then they're doing trials, the final phase 3 trials in the States at the moment. So that should go into 2027. That's going to really move the dial because the margins there are 85%. The rest of the business is actually doing pretty damn well. But it's that one with the profitability going down or flatlining that people have been concentrating on. So it's up to the management team. It's up to the R&D guys to basically make sure that those medical Peak products come through and I made a commercial success. And if that happens, then this would be off to the races, because that medical division it would be absolutely top notch. And you can see why there's a lot of hope for it, because, you know, you're basically putting things which are really lightweight. They're very, very inert, i.e. such that, you know, basically they're not going to degrade. They last for a lifetime, so you're never going to have to replace the stuff. And, you know, basically they're super strong. And if you go into, you know, difficult position, you know, difficult environments, heat or anything like, or x-rays, you're never going to have a problem either. So they've got huge product performance, but they need to bring those to market, those new products, and then they need to start selling it. And that's where the skepticism over the shares at the moment, if that happens, that's why I'm holding. The investment thesis hasn't worked, but it doesn't mean it's broken. I'm holding, continuing, and I'm down about 50%. So, you know.
Gosh, yeah. I mean, I've been just looking at the ShareScope numbers while you've been talking. I mean, it does look good value and financially secure, with a largely more or less debt free balance sheet. That 90p dividend looks like a one off. Prior to that, so maybe the dividend yield, I don't know, just a question mark over the dividend yield, but the forecasts, the consensus broker forecasts, are actually showing profitability going up about 20% for September 2026. So, I mean, if it achieves those forecast numbers, this share's cheap, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it could rally very... I mean, that medical division, if it actually hit those products out, the new trauma products and that peak knee, you could double the market cap on that, because if you think about how many people get, you know, knees, well, they'll do a hip one as well. I mean, it's proving it, that it works, that they can do it in the most complicated joint, and then it's basically everything's all chips on the table.
This is a quality business as well. I mean, the PBT margin on the forecast, admittedly, is about 16%. So that is telling me this is a business with a lot of pricing power. Nice, sound, ungeared balance sheets. I like the look of this, Paul. I've written that down on my pad. I might have to add that to my shopping list.
Don't expect it to shoot the lights out next year anyway. No. It's a longer term. It's a three-year play, in my view.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got David Raywood. He's asking about Gooch and House Co., the industrials business, that I think 40% of its photonics go into defence and aerospace, into things like sighting systems that help direct missiles and guns and this sort of stuff. Another 40% or 45% go into industrial applications, which is a bit softer. And I can't remember I think the other side go into cosmetics, into the healthcare. But the defense and aerospace has done really well. And the shares seem to be starting to turn. So, David, is this sustainable?
Well, it's very volatile, isn't it? Just looking at the recent share price performance. Yeah, it seems to go all over the place. I mean, look, the headline numbers look pretty good. Forward PE of 12.7. Debt is about a third of the market cap, so maybe a little bit high there. You've got a modest yield. We did write something about this recently, but I can't remember what we said. I think we thought it was all right. I don't think we got madly excited about it. They're generally, the questions are nearly all for recent updates. Here we are, aren't they? Tuesday this week. Let me quickly consult my notes. What was it? GHH, isn't it, the ticker? Here we are. This was September 25 results. We're in line with consensus, about 36p. So what's that, PE of about 16, I think, roughly. In line outlook statement as well, with a rise to 46p forecast. So, yeah, looks good value, Paul. Decent results. We're saying priced about right, ? A lot of this is a small cap, really, isn't it? But a lot of things are overpriced, I think. But this one, I think I would say that's worth a closer look on those sorts of valuation numbers and with an inline update. Not bad in tough macro, really, is it?
No, I think they've actually done some smart things over the last 2 years. They've bought a couple of acquisitions in that defence sector, particularly out in the US. So they get those DOD authorizations, and they've beefed that up. I think it's about a third or 40% of their revenues, and you can see that increasing going forward. That's where all their growth is. And then the other thing I think they're trying to do is improve the operating efficiencies at their factories to increase the gross margin, because that's the one area that I've always struggled with. It's about 31%, right. And so if they fill their factories more and scale them more, you might get operating leverage to get that to sort of like, you should be able to get sophisticated technology like that up to 40% gross margins, unless there's actually quite a lot of it's commodity, but say in the industrial side where there's a lot lower, and you've got if I had sight of their products and their gross margins on their variant product, I bet you've got a tail of products that you basically should scrap, and then you should just concentrate on those high volume, higher gross margin products that are selling well, and then, you know, do something with the other spare capacity, because I bet you a lot of that tail products are selling small amounts and are just adding complexity on machine changeovers and, you know, waste and all that kind of stuff. But I'm not a manufacturing expert, but it just smells to me that there's still a long way to go on the self-help, but I think it is positive. It is good what they're doing.
Yeah, those are great points. I think they've got the general read across for lots of companies. I'm very keen on companies that are doing self-help at the moment. I think we mentioned this last time, because there's no top-line growth to be had. So rather than discounting and ramming volume through and chasing revenue without giving a second thought to margins, you know, it's the wrong way to play it, isn't it? You strip out costs, you make yourself much more efficient, and then when demand does rise, you've got that lovely operationally geared effect. So all companies that are doing self-help and improving their operating margins, I think, are worth looking at. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We've got a small company. Got Bill Graham. He's asking about Essensys, which is a software company that does for flexible offices, people that go into Industrious, which is a part of CBRE, and it goes through GLL. And they basically provide the software, access rooms and facilities and stuff, for large offices that are rented out into short term to companies and stuff. Anyway, they've had a bid from their largest shareholder, the ex-CEO, but also they equally did it with a bad trading update. I don't know if you got any quick thoughts on that one. I own the shares, so
I'll keep it brief, because you know it much better than I do. I thought the shares were going to go up because it was a profit warning. You're quite right. And they also said they're putting in place a borrowing facility. so they're running out of cash, basically. It's very small, only, 10 million market cap. But it combined that with saying that the founder, as you said, had kind of informally tabled a 20p cash offer. And I think it was about 15p when they announced that. And I thought, I think it initially opened up at about 17p, but it then gave it all back. And it's now at 15p. So you could see this as an arbitrage and say, well, it's likely to get taken out by the founder at 20p. So I can make a third profit if I buy at the moment. But you're hinging. I think it was linked to the non-execs approving it or something like that, wasn't it, in the update? So I don't know, it could go either way, couldn't it? Very small, very illiquid though. So what are you going to do, Paul? That's more important, because you own the shares. Are you going to hang on, double down, or ditch in the market? Those are the three options, aren't they?
Well, I can't sell. There's just too many. I've got, you know, in the position wise, it would just take the shares down. I mean, it doesn't sufficient liquidity, but my strategy is that I'm just going to hold and wait and see what happens. And the logic being is that if the founder and ex-CEO, and so 30% of the shares, Mark Furness, okay, he loves the business.
Yes.
Frankly, the company has done a terrible job for shareholders. If you look at it when it listed, it's raised 75 million quid.
Course, truth.
I know, and it's burnt through the lot, okay? I mean, it's just has been badly managed. And I say that in the fact that I know Mark and I think he's a good guy, but frankly, the market, the shareholders are willing for this to go, I'm sure. The big ones like I think Schroders own about 10%, and you've got Hargreave Hale own it, and I think Amati own a few as well. So everybody would like to get out.
Now,
exactly. So I'm pretty sure that if Mark can table a a bid, it will get accepted at 20p. The big if, and this is why the shares aren't any higher, is can Mark get the effectively, well, I don't know, if it's 15p is at 10 million. So he needs about, if to buy his next, to buy the other 70% out, he probably needs 9 million quid. Can he personally raise 9 million quid?
Yeah, do we know what his sort of personal financial situation is? Did he kind of bank a ton of money when it floated? Or
he's got a few bob, I think, but whether he's got 9 million, I don't know. Mm. And that's what it comes down to. So I think he's a willing buyer, and I think we've got willing sellers, probably at 20p. But it really, whether can he get the money? And I think that it's preliminary at the moment. So if he doesn't put a number on it, his 30% becomes significantly smaller overnight because the profit is going to take effect.
Didn't they lose a big client as well? Or am I imagining that?
Yeah, they had two parts of the business. They had the software business, and then they had effectively the internet sort of connectivity part of the business, which is where they lost that that contract. And then they lost, actually, I think they did lose another a smaller software part of the business.
Yeah, so, in the latest update, I have a feeling a customer didn't renew, but I might have imagined that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but no, it hasn't been doing so well. Anyway, so I would say, Mark, if you've got the cash, stick it in, buy it, because I'm sure people would be willing to sell, but... Anyway, let's wait. But I think there's a correct, healthy level of skepticism about whether that transaction can go ahead and whether he can actually get 9 million quid to buy the other 70% out.
It's a pity, because it did look like quite promising, didn't it? And it's a shame where companies can't quite push deals over the line, and you know they've got this pipeline. It seems to be one of them, and you can understand it. You know, in tough macro, clients just don't want to sign deals, do they? They don't want to commit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's a big picture actually here, and you're gonna nail me on this, aren't you, Paul? Okay, but where companies get listed or raise money of enormous quantities, 75 million quid, then it reduces the level of urgency and cash.
Great point.
Cash sensibility and cash ownership and shareholder. Because I'm pretty sure not all of that was perfectly value-adding expenditure that they did, and I bet that if they had an autopsy of what they did with 75 million quid, I bet they would say, actually, you know, we could have cut our cloth a lot harder. Bootstrapping companies is good for the private sector, perfectly. It's not great for the public sector, because as soon as you have a problem, you have to raise money, and that's bad for sentiment. But there's a balance between giving companies so much money that effectively they don't become sensible custodians of those funds.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I totally agree. I mean, the more normal situation is that companies float with raising nowhere near enough cash, with no contingency reserve at all, and wacky hockey stick shaped forecasts. That's what normally happens, isn't it? And it ends in disaster practically every time. So, you're right. It's just finding a balance, isn't it? Definitely.
Yeah, good. We've got another small. We've got Tom and a number of other people asking about Techmar, which is an oil field services company. Did they win basically a contract for offshore just recently, a big one, 8 million euros, I read, or something? The shares have obviously bombed out, but they're up 17% today.
Yeah, there was we picked up on that first thing this morning and put that in our pre-8 a.m. Good and bad section. So I'm glad we spotted that. Yeah, very small company, tiny company, but it was quite a big contract win, with an upbeat commentary in it as well, I think. So I haven't looked in any more detail, because it's not really of any interest to me, because I think it's been bedeviled by large lumpy contracts, you know, and delays, and you know, so you've got to bear that in mind. Yeah, every now and again these things get a flurry of contract wins and the shares shoot up, but there's no recurring revenue as far as I'm aware. So I try to avoid these types of companies. But anyway, it's had a lot of financial problems in the last year or two. But I think it was rescued by a big investor or something. So, could be life in it. Definitely worth a look to see how significant today's contract win was. It looked quite big, quite a big individual contract. So, there could be something there. It does these protective cover to protect undersea cables, doesn't it? So, you know, to put a flexible sort of wrapping around them to protect them. So what you really want, I suppose, is Vladimir Putin to go on a rampage with his divers, cutting all the cables under the North Sea and whatever, and then they'll do a roaring trade.
Yeah, no, right. Very good point. Never know. Okay, good. We've got Grant. He's asking about a company you own, actually, which is a competitor a bit to Spire Healthcare, One Health Group. I think they do they come out with numbers this week or something?
Yeah, I like this one. I've only got a small sort of dip my toe in position in One Health Group. I've got to do more research on it. I think the though actually, funnily enough, I was meant to be meeting the management. They're doing some PR at the moment in the city, and I happen to be up in London, but it didn't work with my diary. It's a recent float, owner managed by a surgeon, I believe, a retired or semi-retired surgeon who still owns about 40%. Lovely type of float. They raised 10 million quid, I think, from memory at the IPO for the company, not for selling shareholders. So they've still got the cash on the balance sheet. And they're, like you say, a tiny version of Spire Healthcare in a way. They are helping to reduce NHS waiting lists. It's already profitable and lovely balance sheet with a load of cash on it. They're building their own facilities. So my question, which I would have asked management if I'd met them, is whether I like the current business model because they piggyback on NHS facilities, you know, and do private, you know, the way doctors do private operations, but using NHS facilities. I think it's often at the weekends or whatever. And that seems to me very efficient because then the private company doesn't have to, it doesn't have any capex at all. They're just using NHS equipment. So I'm curious as to how building their own facilities, yes, will expand their capacity and their flexibility, but will they get a, you know, a good return on the capital? I think if you valuation wise, I think One Health Group looks priced about right. But if you strip out the cash, which is about a third of the market cap, it's actually quite good value, I think. So certainly one of the more interesting, fairly recent floats, I would say, which is why I picked up a little entry-level position. So it's kind of on my portfolio and it reminds me to look at it every time they put out results and maybe buy some more. I haven't bought any more after the recent set of results, but the figures looked okay, I think. I think the broker dropped the forecast earnings by about 10%, I think. So, yeah, I think it looks interesting. Long term, you know, could be a nice thing, but I'd like to meet management. Hey, maybe we should do one of our two Pauls sessions and see if we can talk to management, Paul.
Yeah, well, one question, if you run into him or get him beforehand, then ask him about the new NHS commissioning environment that's hit Spire Healthcare and whether it's going to impact One Health Group would be my first and only question.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Because they're swimming in the same pool, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, the thing I like about it, again, it's so small that you could see this being, you know, if it does really well over the next few years or if the market perceives that it's going to do very well, you know, you could double or triple your money on it. Whereas I think that's for a bigger company, that's more difficult, arguably.
Yeah. Okay, we got one comment. Tim Kempstery says, very thanks, Paul, for your pens. Apparently you've sent him through some pens.
Yes, I've been dispatching orange pens, these little devils. I've been dispatching them to my premium subscribers on demand. And yeah, I took a bag of 25 parcels to the post office the other day. So it's good to hear they've arrived. So you're welcome, Tim. Thank you for supporting us. We appreciate it.
Good. We've got final question. It's actually an investment trust. It's Martin Cole. He's asking about Lindsay Train Investment Trust. Have you ever had a look at it? It trades at a 35% discount. I think it's run by that rock star big cap fund manager who's had a nightmare, I think, over the last 5 years with positions in things like Diageo, and I think he had Burberry as well and all these. Anyway, the shares have had an absolute bath. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel in this one at all?
I don't know. I mean, it's one of the Nick Train, isn't it? I
think that's it, called. Nick Train. Yeah.
These star fund managers seem to go through patches where they're effectively on the right side of the trade, the right side of the market. You know, they bought into high ROCE, you know, large caps, whatever. They all re-rated from P's of 10 to about 30, and then of course, you know, that cycle eventually peters out, doesn't it? So I'm not really a big fan of following star fund managers because it tends to be people who are just in the right place at the right time with a particular strategy. The one exception obviously being Uncle Warren, who I always read his shareholder letter. So no, I haven't really got anything to add, but do you follow this one, Paul?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, basically looking at that chart, you know, I mean, the FTSE 100 has gone up. We know that. It's nearly rocked at 10,000. And the MSCI, you know, world index must have gone up like 15% because it tracks NASDAQ and the S&P. And to basically go from 16 quid in 21 down to just over 6 quid, nearly just under 7 quid at the moment.
It's terrible, isn't it?
It's terrible, yeah. I would not be a holder, to be perfectly honest, even though there's a 25% discount to NAV.
Because, I'm assuming with it being an investment trust that it's closed-ended, though, is it?
Yes, it is. Yes, I think it is. Yeah.
Okay, and they're in larger mega caps, aren't they? So presumably he's not locked into any positions. He could liquidate them. I don't know. There could be turnaround potential there. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I would only consider it if he changed his strategy myself. I think that's a long-term 5-year track record that is not working in this environment. And I really don't know, but just imagine that. I think he's probably got caught in a lot of value traps because he's gone.
Well, Diageo is terrible. I mean, we've been saying for a couple of years this thing's massively overpriced. Terrible balance sheet. You know, it's got about 20 billion in net debt or something. I mean, just awful. You know, even a humble shares blogger of small caps can take one look at the numbers at Diageo a couple of years ago and say, why the hell are people paying so much for it? Mm. It's pretty obvious, really. Mm. But I don't know. It's easy.
I think there's a broader issue, actually. Do your do DIY investing, because if some really smart guys like Nick Train can have a bit of a mare over 5 years and he's running your money and he loses half of it when the market should be up 50% over that 5 years, then actually, hey, you've got a lot of, you know, there's a lot of time for at least trying to manage some of your own money rather than just put it into unit trusts or put it into investment trusts or other collective vehicles. Yes, it may be easy, or it's simple for like an ETF tracker that your IFA does it. But frankly, it does not mean you're going to do well if you put it into the wrong stuff. So I would say, you know, if you've got any type of common sense, have a go yourself. Put a portion of your own portfolio together and have a go, and you'll get more confident. And because very bright people can lose a lot of your money as well. So,
definitely, I think a lot of it's luck. It really is. It's not necessarily having insights about companies. It's if a company re-rates from a P of 10 to a P of 30, like Apple did. It went from being underpriced to overpriced. You're not a genius. You got lucky when something re-rated. You know, and I think that's what a lot of these so-called star fund managers do. The ones I really respect are the guys at the Harwood and all the offshoots of that, the Onward Opportunities, Lawrence's thing. You know, the guys you interview, who are really doing something. They've got a smallish pot of money. They're getting involved in those companies constructively very often, helping to, you know, really sorting things out. And I really admire and respect those guys. They're like company doctors in a way, aren't they? And I think that's much cleverer, actually, than somebody who just raises billions, you know, or does like a Woodford type thing. It raises billions on a track record, throws it at things he doesn't really understand, and you know, gets carried away. I think a lot of these so-called star fund managers are not stars. They just got lucky. They just happened to be in a particular area where the market hugely re-rated large caps. So, and of course, as we know, it can go the other way, can't it?
Yeah. Okay, good. I think we're there now. We've just got a quick comment, actually, from Questa Ware. He's just said Trustpilot has responded an hour ago. So we may be able to now log off, guys, and we go and read what they've said about their...
What's the share price? We've got to look at the current share price of Trustpilot. Hang on. I can't find it. Where is it?
Let me see. That's what I've got. Oh, wow.
What?
Does it say it's gone up? Hang on.
What is it? TRST, isn't it? I'm going to have to...
Yeah, no, I'm getting it almost like it. Has it gone up?
Oh, down 28%.
Oh, is it down 28%? Oh, okay, yeah, fine.
37. Oh, right. I shall have to update my article about that, actually. I'll do that now.
Okay, good. Okay, well, thanks everyone for your questions. Sorry it's been a bit long. We've gone for we've had a monster today. I know it was going to be packed jammed, and we've had some great conversations. Brilliant questions as always. Paul, you've been top draw.
It's been great fun as ever.
And we're going to do it next Wednesday at 2 o'clock next week.
Right.
because I've got a big day. My daughter's getting married on the Saturday, which is
lovely.
There's a few things, which is rather nice. And before actually I close, I'd like to say a big shout out to my dad, who's actually been in hospital all week. He's got a problem. He's hopefully coming out. But anyway, he's one of your subscribers, Paul. He loves yours. And he listens to your podcast every single day, even when he's in hospital. So he enjoys that. Keeps him happy and keeps him connected with what's happening in the world. So anyway, 2 o'clock next Wednesday, guys. Same place, same channel.
Smashing. Thanks, Paul. Really enjoyed it. Bye, everyone.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.